Hi there. Welcome back to the business side of fitness. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Each week on the show, we'll highlight fitness industry experts to learn about their personal journey and unique perspective. Through these conversations, we'll learn all about what it really takes to succeed in fitness. This show is brought to you by Vanessa Severiano, LLC, specializing in fitness and wellness business development for impactful brands. The time has come to start the show. Everyone's got a story, and now it's time to hear from this week's guest. Let's welcome to the show Bill McBride. He's a health club industry veteran with over 25 years of experience leading and managing all aspects of commercial health clubs, medical fitness centers, residential, community, multi-tenant, and corporate fitness sites. He co-founded Active Wellness LLC and owns a health club consultancy, BMC3. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Vanessa. Glad to be here.
So I'm excited to talk to you because you've held so many amazing leadership positions. You've been in the industry for a long time. And like we were chatting before we hit record, it's always great to showcase people that are actually out there that have real life experience that aren't just marketing themselves as experts on the internet, but actually are experts. So I'm so excited to have you here with us today, Bill. And I'd love it if you could just kind of start with how you came to be in the fitness industry, how your journey started.
Yeah, well, there's a quote about that. Putting aside anyone's religious beliefs, experts built the Titanic, amateurs built the Ark. You know, so anytime somebody says they're an expert at something, I have a little skepticism, especially in our industry, only because, you know, our attrition rates are so high. We only impact 20, 25% of the population. Like, we still have a lot of room to grow in our industry. So I like the way that that you're framing the expert thing. I use the word veteran, been around a while.
And so through all the years and all the leadership positions that you've held, both with IHRSA and in managing clubs, you know, what are some of the problems that you've seen that have happened in the industry, both past and present? Obviously, we have the COVID issue right now, which is really affecting and impacting the fitness industry. But what are some other issues that you help people overcome?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot packed into that question, Vanessa. Some of the issues with the industry, I'd go back to, we have been an industry geared toward those that have a little bit or a lot of money. We typically put commercial health clubs in affluent markets, an educated, more affluent membership base by and large. We have avoided regulation from the government. We have fought regulation at every step of the way. And so now we're viewed in a manner of, oh, health clubs are, you know, like country clubs without golf. For people of affluence, they only affect a small percentage of the population. And by the way, they're not regulated. We don't know if they're good, bad, indifferent. So I think the standards and licensing issues, you know, barbershops, nail salons, every business that had a license involved seemed to get open or stay open a lot more than we did in the health club market. So I think part of our issue is perception with regard to standards, perception with regard to a big umbrella available for all. That's the first piece of it. So from the second part of your question about, you know, what do I tell people or advise people on, you know, look at your core product from the point of view of a wellness lens, of a doing good prevention lens, of a potentially helping people with chronic disease lens. Look at it from that perspective and promote the good in the product. Like, I think most of the clubs in our industry that operate at a high standard are essential businesses. You know, the importance of exercise for depression, isolation, suicide prevention, social integration, you know, those are just as important, those mental wellness aspects, as are the physical aspects that we provide. So focus on your reputation and credibility in your marketplace with your government agencies, with your consumers, you know, with everybody in your community. Really focus on what you can do to do good and help the community with their health and well-being.
I love that. You know, there's something that keeps, like, a reoccurring theme that keeps coming up for me. And something that's driving me crazy right now is all this focus on fitness trackers and tracking all these things, which I think are great. like, don't get me wrong. I love tracking, you know, data and metrics and understanding how your body is working. But I think that creates a barrier for people that are intimidated about fitness or about, you know, exercise. They don't even, the same person that walks in a gym and thinks that they need to be in shape to join a gym, which I've heard a million times. I know it sounds so crazy, but people really feel intimidated. And then now we're layering on this, oh, you have to track how many steps, you have to track your macros, you have to track your sleep cycles. It's like so confusing and overwhelming for people. So Bill, how do you think we can make fitness more accessible for more people? I mean, isn't that what the industry is all about?
Yeah, I think that I agree with you in a lot of ways with regard to the tracking. I want to nuance it a little bit though. Whatever you measure, you get more of. So some of the basic elements, tracking steps, for example, that can be very motivating, even for a novice or a sedentary individual. You know, government says I should get 10,000 steps. If I get 10,000 steps every day, I can fight off certain chronic diseases. You know, to me, that's an elementary, basic kind of thing that's not overwhelming for people, right? To people that get a little more advanced, you know, I'm a big fan of the MyZone, right? Because it democratizes fitness. You're using MEPS, you know, you're using a thing that doesn't matter what condition you're in when you use it. So I think not overwhelming people with measuring everything, but picking something that helps those that like to be motivated by some type of measurement can be a useful tool. But we do, we sometimes overcomplicate it. The minimum amount of exercise required for prevention of disease is low dosage. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of exercise to have efficacy in disease prevention and chronic care management. So I think sometimes us, you know, in our industry that are exercise physiologists, registered dietitians, and use the science, sometimes can overwhelm a person that's not ready for that level of behavioral change. And so you have to create that member journey based on who the person is and what's going to help them lead to success. So, you know, I agree with you in reducing the overwhelm, but I also think there's some tools out there that can help get people gradually moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. It's about consistency over intensity to, you know, get lasting results. So you also, Bill, brought up something that was interesting to me, kind of alluding to legitimizing the legitimacy of the fitness industry and how we're viewed in the public. I don't know what the answer to that is. And I've been a part of a couple of different roundtables and whatnot on, you know, identifying, we're all aware of the problem, right? We were considered non-essential and so many business owners, even, you know, these huge franchises like an Orange Theory and whatnot, they're still small business owners, you know, the people that own these locations, and these people are being seriously impacted. So what are some potential solutions to legitimizing the fitness industry to, you know, have those standards? I don't know. Is standardization even something that's possible with coaches and the fitness industry? It's just kind of like, it's gone so far. Where do we go from here?
Right. No, I'm passionate about standards. When I was on the IHRSA board of directors, I was on the standards committee. There's actually a committee on the board that looks at international standards. I was a contributing editor for the American College of Sports Medicine, fifth edition of the facility standards and guidelines text that recently came out this past year. So I am on a committee actually now with IHRSA as a non-board member, as just a member of IHRSA, along with a bunch of other people that are working on the standards issue in our industry. And IHRSA just launched this week a quality mark called Active and Safe. So clubs that make a pledge to certain activities can get this seal for their membership and for their consumers. And it's a first step in getting clubs to make a pledge and a commitment to safety and to doing things the right way. We're working on longer term standards for the industry that people can adopt, but we need credibility with regard to this is what we represent, this is what we deliver, and we hold ourselves accountable to that. And most of the industries that have been successful with that, you know, it's had to have third party validation, right? Somebody other than yourself, you know, telling yourself that you're safe. So IHRSA is working on that. And I think there's a lot that we can do You know, I think clubs following the local laws, doing what they can to communicate with their members and staff, doing everything that that a person of good conscience would do to operate at the highest levels. So I think that that's one of the things that I like about the sector of medical wellness centers. They tend to take that piece a little more seriously because they're dealing with people with special populations and health issues, and they're dealing with people with different levels of needs. So, you know, looking more at the medical wellness approach to general fitness, I think would do very well for our industry.
I love the idea of bridging the gap between medicine and fitness, because fitness really is preventative medicine, right? And food is medicine too. And all these things, just, I see them operating so separate. And I think that there's a huge opportunity to kind of put all of these things in tandem to really help people get results and achieve that optimal health that everybody's always chasing. You know, why is there such a disconnect between medical and fitness and nutrition in the marketplace? Why is it just like viewed as so separate? I don't understand why those dots haven't been connected a little bit more after all this time, right? It's 2020. We have every gizmo and gadget, but we don't really have a true fitness marketplace. We don't really have anybody that's really like killing it to bring a great offering to the masses. So what is the opportunity there?
Yeah, I'm Active Wellness is actually working on two models in that space. It's interesting. We have two clubs in California. One in Petaluma that was built as a family, community, commercial health club. We have one in Napa that was built as a medical wellness center. And when we got involved with these two properties, they were completely different. We actually designed the commercial club years and years ago, and we've renovated now the wellness center. But one was clinical, and you might walk into a medical wellness center, you know, 10 years ago, and the people would be sitting down as you walked up to the desk. They wouldn't stand up and greet you. I mean, you're a sales and marketing professional, you know, eyes and teeth, 5 feet away, make eye contact, smile, stand up, be ready to serve. They had a clinical approach. You know, patients were coming in, even if they were members, they were coming in and I need to check you in for a process of clinical, you know, outcomes kind of thing. Whereas you walk into the typical commercial club back then, and I'm talking, you know, 5-10 plus years ago, there was this disconnect. One was clinical and one was fitness, fun, you know? And so there's something we can learn from both of those models, being professional, being outcomes-based, being having efficacy in all of our programs, having proof and science behind what we tell people to do and what we take people through. All of that can help the typical commercial club get better. The customer service, the keeping it fresh, the keeping it hip, the keeping it exciting. A lot of medical wellness can learn from that. We Active Wellness received the Partner of the Year award this year from the Medical Fitness Association. I'm very proud of that award because I really believe in that continuum. Fitness, wellness, medicine. And you're right, exercise is medicine, food is medicine. And sometimes we put things in silos. You know, we try to treat the whole body, the whole person. And with that, I want to go back to the importance of mental wellness. You know, it's eating, it's sleeping, it's hydration, it's physical activity, and it's mental wellness. So, you know, there's a lot of keys and pieces to that puzzle.
Right. And I think, you know, health insurance is an interesting piece of that puzzle too, right? So like, how can we I think that would further legitimize some of the offerings too, in the eyes of the general public, you know, if it's covered by health insurance, like, oh, this is a part of my well-being. And so, and it does lower the barrier of entry for some people if they have health insurance through their job and whatnot. So is that something that you think is going to become more prevalent in the future?
I think so. I think everybody in the medical and insurance aspect or industries is realizing the importance of exercise and activity to manage chronic conditions and to prevent conditions from progressing. You know, if you have metabolic syndrome and you exercise, you can start to reverse some of that, maybe never get full-blown diabetes, maybe never require insulin treatment. So there's a lot of proof in that, in the dollars. Optum and Silver Sneakers and all those kinds of players that have historically, you know, dealt with Medicare, you know, and patients that are seniors, they're upping their game. They're giving higher reimbursements for higher price clubs. A lot of times the higher price clubs, it didn't make sense because the reimbursements on the visits for those seniors was so small. So they're redoing a lot of that and offering higher premiums to clubs for those visits on the senior side. You also have most insurance plans allowing for reimbursement of registered dietitian services. You know, if somebody's BMI is above a certain amount, some have unlimited sessions with a registered dietitian, some have 12, some have 3. So clubs are billing back the insurance company for those sessions with a registered dietitian. And, you know, there's a process that you have to go through with that. The registered dietitian has to be certified through the carriers and so on and so on. But you're seeing more billable services that are available for health clubs that expand their horizon on how they look at things. And then IRSA's been pushing, you know, FIT, you know, where there's a tax deduction for sports programs, fitness equipment, health club memberships, you know, pushing that through Congress for many, many, many years. And so, you know, we should incent people to spend money on things that get them active and get them moving.
Right. And what you just mentioned, Bill, makes me think about the role of the coach and the role of the fitness provider, right? I think there's a lot of fear right now in our industry of like, am I getting edged out by technology, right? Is AI going to take the role of the coach? Because there are so many new apps that are just AI based, right? It's just an algorithm. It's not a person that's providing this real-time feedback for you. And everything that you mentioned just right now really presents an opportunity for the fitness professional. So Bill, why don't you share a little bit about your consultancy with us? Like, who is your ideal client and how do you work with brick and mortar gym locations?
Yeah. So, you know, my full-time job is co-founder, president, CEO of Active Wellness. And that's where I spend the bulk of my time. We have over 60 sites in 10 states and 2 sites in Canada. And we manage fitness centers for all kinds of other entities, hospitals, commercial clubs, corporate fitness centers, multi-tenant properties, you know, so all over the spectrum. And we've got an amazing team that I work with on that. You know, 15, 20, 25% of my time ebbs and flows depending on what's going on. I do consulting for quality operators. You know, I've worked with a lot of the big names in the industry, independent club operators that may have 1, 2, 3 clubs. I've worked with a lot of franchise groups. I've worked with several Gold's Gym franchise groups in major markets. I've worked with groups outside of our industry that are interested in our industry. I do expert witness work for certain lawyers that are representing clubs and defendants in personal injury cases. So I handle pretty much consultancy to optimize a business's performance. Like you, I do sales and marketing. I do sales training. I do customer service training, leadership management, strategic planning, organizational development, comp plans. I advise on how to get prepared for an exit through performance. I don't do valuations of a business. I don't broker sales for clubs. I don't do a lot of programming for fitness. Like I won't, you know, program on fitness, you know, that's not my wheelhouse. But anything business related to optimizing a club or organization, I pretty much do that. And then I do a lot of speaking internationally and domestically. So, you know, my perfect client is somebody that needs help. You know, I work on retainer with a lot of accounts. I work on time and materials, hourly based. You know, if I'm not providing results, you know, you fire me. I have not been fired. You know, I generate a lot more than I cost for people, but that's kind of what I do there. And I thoroughly enjoy it. And then I'm also an advisor for some tech companies, in the space where I help them bring their technologies forward and how to adapt them for our audience and our industry.
And so across all these mediums, I mean, you're in basically every vertical of fitness. How does the consumer vary, right? So the consumer that, you know, goes to a multi-unit gym versus somebody that is a member of a commercial club versus, you know, as somebody that is, you know, a part of a corporate wellness program, how do you see the clientele different?
Yeah, it's interesting. Most of the barriers and differences are imposed by organizations. You know, like in a corporate environment, they might not let you have access to the employees based on their privacy policies, because the employee is an employee and they're a member of the fitness center, but they're an employee first in a corporate campus. So those kind of things. But all over the world, from Russia to China to Japan to Dublin, to, I mean, Ireland to Australia, the way people consume fitness and the way individual consumers approach fitness is very, very similar. There's more similar with human beings and their approach to fitness than there are differences. So most of the differences are organizationally imposed by how you're trying to get access to those people and serve those people. But human behavior and human motivation is pretty consistent globally.
Right. Doesn't it just come down to, you know, communication, and everybody wants to feel seen, heard, you know, encouraged, motivated? Those are common threads. Those are common denominators that, you know, at the end of the day, we're all people, right? And we have those basic needs. And I think that, you know, businesses sometimes get caught up in, oh, this is a tech consumer. And it's like, we call them consumers, but they are people, right? It's not a robot on the other side of that phone or that app. So Bill, one thing, speaking of tech and apps and all of that, right? Something that I hear all the time that I'm sure you hear too is the future of fitness, right? People love to apply that label to everything, right? Right now, I'm like, what's not the future of fitness? So what do you think the future of fitness is?
You know, ACSM has great, you know, 10 trends that they've identified, you know, for the upcoming year. And a lot of them are things that we would all expect, you know, digital, wearables, group fitness, weight training, I mean, so on and so on, the normal things. You know, the future of fitness is people are going to need to be around other people. We're human creatures. You said it. We're social animals. The amount of people that buy personal training for companionship is significant. You know, personal training isn't just for fitness results. A lot of people buy personal training because they want somebody to help them and be with them and have, you know, socialization with. It happens a lot in the senior markets. So the social aspects of human beings needing to be around other human beings is not going away. If I do a live presentation, there's a different chemical reaction in my body than if I do a Zoom or do an audio presentation, right? I get a reaction, a chemical reaction from the audience. They get it from me as the speaker. And there's a human energy that happens when human beings are together, right? So with all the talk about virtual, and I think virtual is going to keep going forward and keep growing, and I'm a big believer in it. It won't replace live. People need to be around other people. So take that to the next level, the growth in group fitness. Group fitness is going to continue to be critical. People are motivated by the energy of other people around them. I might go out to a bank when I'm not traveling and working in my home office and do my transaction in the bank just to be around other human beings versus the ATM, because people want that human interaction. I don't need to have a long, intimate conversation with anybody at the bank. Just being around that energy makes me feel better. So group fitness, live interaction, doing what we do best, you know, that's the continued, you know, future of fitness. I think that using technology to better serve people, you know, so I'm a big believer in high touch, high technology, but high touch first. It's got to be people to people, and use technology to solve a problem, not just because technology is cool. I'm bullish on the continued evolution of innovation, but the core is going to be, who do you hire that has a service heart and the qualifications to support the goals of that member? But there's some cool trends I really like. The outdoor fitness programming, huge, majorly accelerated by this COVID. The personal training pods, having separate areas within a facility for personal trainings or for members to work out on their own with the equipment set in those little areas. I think that helps sell personal training. It like shows it as a product. It makes people feel more comfortable. It takes congestion off the floor when personal training clients are competing with regular members and that whole, you know, who's using what machine, you know, so personal training pods, outdoor training, virtual offerings, you know, I think those are all here to stay and grow and can be a very valuable evolution in our industry.
You had so many good little nuggets of information there. I was trying to take it all in. I mean, definitely 100%, like just from working in gyms for so many years, people buy personal training for therapy, for companionship, for a variety of reasons, right? Sometimes I tell the trainers, I'm like, wow, like you must be exhausted when you get home because you're absorbing all of that energy and then obviously giving energy. So it is a huge energy exchange, and the same for group fitness instructors. Like these people give it their all. They're, you know, providing that energy in a way that you just can't get from an app. I mean, listen, I'm using an app right now, working out at home, or a couple different apps if I'm being honest, because I'm just like a fitness nerd, but it doesn't compare. This is the first time in my life I haven't had a gym membership. And it doesn't compare. I'm dying to go back to the gym, like really desperate to get back to the gym and just be around. Well, first of all, yes, it's the energy exchange of the instructor or the trainer that's leading you, that's motivating you, but it's also just being around like-minded people that are also trying to work on themselves and improve on themselves. And I think that can't be underestimated. When I think of the future of fitness, I think about more integrated offerings. So meaning integrating fitness, nutrition, sleep, and all of those things together. And that doesn't necessarily mean you need to be an expert at everything. It might be an opportunity for collaboration and working with other brands that do specialize in those areas that you might not specialize in. But I think consumer demands are shifting and people are expecting more and more of their fitness provider or their gym membership, right? Before it used to just be like, I'm going to class for 45 minutes and I'm expecting a great 45 minutes. Now I'm expecting an experience when I'm not at the studio too, right? So Bill, what do you think if there's a gym owner or a fitness brand that's looking to make one investment, like they're limited on funds or they can only make one investment, what investment would that be?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, there's a practicality to outdoor space, increasing your footprint without any additional rent, you know, tents, awnings, heaters, planners, making it look turf, making it look like a destination, making it look really good, using that whatever percentage of the year you can. People have a different tolerance for temperature outside than they do inside. If you change the temperature indoors, you know, 2 or 3 degrees, people will make comments. You know, we have a 20 to 30, if not more, degree fluctuation where we'll be comfortable outside. So the outdoor training would be where a lot of people are actually putting their investments right now. Reconfiguring your space with the personal training areas and so on. That's an inexpensive way to approach it. I think virtual is like a pool in some ways. You know, your streaming services, your classes, you're having a virtual class schedule available to your members. Not everybody might use it, but everybody's going to appreciate you having it. And it's going to help you with your footprint, social media footprint, your image, your awareness. So every member wants you to have a pool. And, you know, 5-10% of your members use the pool. You know, most people are going to like that you have a virtual offering, even if you only get 10-15% interacting with it. So the virtual would be another area. And then you have to look at playing in the, you know, medical integration space. I mean, you don't have to call it medical integration. You can call it wellness. You can call it healthy living. You can call it whatever you want. But we have an aging population. We have chronic disease. We have obesity at an all-time high. We have kids screen time and sedentary behaviors at an all-time high. We have an uptick in suicide rates pretty much across the board, an uptick in opioid use. You know, so all of those things are medical wellness issues, right? And so we don't have to call it, you know, clinical names, but we need to address those issues for the population, or we'll continue to serve a sliver of the market that gets it. And quite frankly, if we didn't have clubs, they would train outside or train somewhere else and they would still be in shape. Like that, you know, that 10% group, you know, they're going to be fit and healthy. You know, we just happen to make it convenient for them. So I want to make a bigger difference in the world than that 10%. I want to affect people that need it. So I'm a big fan of programs that you buy or take on from other people. Rocksteady for Parkinson's, great program. the arthritis programs for pool. I mean, you don't have to recreate the wheel on some of these programs. You can use programs for special populations that already exist. So I think you got to look at how do you better serve the humanity with regard to people with conditions that we can help prevent or manage.
Oh my God, there's so much opportunity out there. And something that I'm very passionate about is, you know, getting kids to move. I'm the mother of two teenage boys, and it's insane to me, like, how obsessed with YouTube and video games they are. I'm like, I was a kid. Granted, that was a long, long time ago, but I was a kid too. And like, I didn't stop moving. And, you know, TV was like, it was like a side dish. It wasn't the main course, you know? And now it's just like constantly looking at the screen. And it's like, well, how can we incorporate fitness and technology? I mean, I will say one of my sons has an Oculus, you know, the virtual reality thing, and he does move around when he's playing those games. So I'd love to see the incorporation of some more of that to get, you know, gamifying fitness to speak to, you know, meeting these kids where they're at and speaking to those kids. And life expectancy is only increasing. So there, we do need to serve the 50 and older market, right? And how are we talking to those people, and how are we meeting them where they're at? And, you know, the rock hard abs and the weight loss, you know, pitch is kind of antiquated for some of these people, right? We keep beating the same drum. And if we want to reach the other 80 to 90% of the population, we have to change some of our marketing messages. We need to think more about health and wellness and not just about getting ripped, getting shredded for summer and whatnot. So Bill, I'd love to hear your thoughts on retention right now and in these times. Like, how are you advising gyms or even in your own locations, how are you improving retention rates or at least trying to stop the bleed? Because a lot of what I'm hearing from gym owners is that they're really struggling with retention right now.
Yeah, I wish I had an easy answer. IHRSA did some surveys with the member management software companies that have the data on all the memberships. And a couple months back, 15% of all commercial health clubs have permanently closed. And expectation is another, I think, 10% or 15%. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 15% will close. So there's a contraction in our industry from a supply side of probably 25-30% at least. Could be even higher now that we have these additional closures. So retention is kind of interesting, because for those clubs that closed, there's going to be an influx of members for those clubs that are open in certain markets with certain locations. So that's not retention, that's acquisition, but it's finding a new home for those people. So it fits into the total membership, you know, macro conversation. At the club level, certain people are ready to get back, like yourself. Certain people may want to come back with the right precautions, and certain people won't come back right now. They may come back after a vaccination is in place. They may come back when, you know, the media sees a dip in you know, the crisis aspect of this. So you can't, you know, expect everybody to respond to your same message. We're clean, we're safe, we're essential, get back here. We're clean, we're safe, we're essential. If you're comfortable coming back, we'd love to have you, and here's what we're doing. You know, so I think the retention piece is, one, telling members what you're doing, being transparent when you have a case, because let's say you have an outbreak at your club, two or three people get COVID, and you don't tell anybody, and it posts on Instagram or Facebook or wherever, you're going to get lambasted as not credible, sneaky, shady, and not safe. So if you have cases, you've got to be able to be transparent with that. So at Active, if we have a member that reports that they have COVID, they call in, say, "Hey, I've got COVID. I was in your club yesterday." We have an intake form. We immediately email all the members that were in the facility when that member was here. If somebody had close contact and we asked them certain questions, what did you do? Where were you? Did you have your mask off at any point? Blah, blah, blah. We call those members that had close contact and talk to them directly. The amount of positive feedback we get from those emails, and we've only had, I think, three cases of members in different locations, none of which appear to have contracted it at our facilities. We've had 3 members and 2 staff, and no contractions that we can attribute to our own locations. So the transparency is key to retention. If people trust you, they'll wait this out and stay. Financial hardship is real for people. Unemployment's at an all-time high. People are uncertain about their future. You know, are they going to be furloughed again? Are they going to lose their job? So, you know, do you have a freeze policy that it doesn't cost anybody anything? Do you have a communication plan about what you're doing and when you're open and how you're going to treat people? If you say you can stay with me and I won't charge you and I'll protect your rate, and when you come back, we'll get you, we'll give you this as far as a program or what have you, you have a higher probability of keeping those people than not communicating with them at all and waiting for them to quit. And then say, don't quit. We won't charge you. We're going to do this. Please don't quit now. Once they've made a decision to quit, it's too late. So being proactive and communicating and not worrying about, I better not say anything because I'll wake people up, it's not the right approach in today's society. You got to communicate. You got to be transparent. You got to be proactive. So communication, credibility, freezes, and really walk on the talk. Use video to show what you're doing, and be very, very informative about the benefits of exercise for immune systems and so on and so on. So I think it's a multi-pronged approach, just like you probably always work with your clients. You know, retention isn't a program. It's a way of doing business.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. You have to eat that frog, right? Like if you want to avoid telling people that somebody in there, you know, in your facility was sick, you're right. Because I know somebody here in Miami that had a case of COVID and they didn't say anything. And then it just circulated. It's a really bad look, especially, you know, it's a small world. And once word gets out, it's just the trust is lost. And I think that, you know, we need to be flexible and lead with our humanity, because even though these are clients, they are people too, and they're struggling. They might have a loved one that's sick at home, or you know, they might be struggling with loss of work or a loss of a loved one. You know, we have to be really flexible and lead with our humanity right now and come up with solutions that are creative and not be so policy driven, right? And I think sometimes it's like, and I understand, like, listen, it's a scary time for business owners. My husband had to close his Pilates and physical therapy center because he served an older population and the landlord was just not willing to negotiate on the lease at all. So I can really understand these business owners that are struggling right now and they want to, you know, just hold on to the clients that they have. But the way to do that isn't to dig your heels in on policy. It's really to be flexible, connect with these people, say, listen, I'm here with you. I'm here every day. Like, how can we work this out? How can I service you? How can I make you feel good about returning or about, you know, providing you with an alternative solution? We just really have to be willing to look at things through a different lens right now.
Vanessa, are you familiar with Medallia and MXM?
No, I'm not. Tell me.
So Medallia is a customer feedback, customer experience platform. And MXM, you know, provides Medallia for the fitness industry. That's the company Blair McCaney runs and owns. But the voice of the customer is really critical here, you know, and basically it allows you to continuously in a drip campaign, you know, a few a day, survey your entire membership base on an ongoing basis, like a continuous pulse. So you get that feedback on Net Promoter, likely to be a member in 6 months, how happy you are with your fitness results. And with that data, you can target people that are happy with the club but not happy with fitness results for personal training. You can it gives you an opportunity to give a Google rating at the end. It gives you an opportunity to refer somebody with a membership that you can gift them from the platform. So it's mainly a customer experience, retention, understanding your membership base, but it's also a rev gen in reputation management and referral. But it's any operator that wants to succeed has got to listen to their consumer. And that voice of the customer is what you and I are just talking about with this retention, right? Understanding what your customers are thinking, what they're fearing, what they want, what they need. You know, so I would just advise, you know, anybody that's not listening to their customers with an ongoing customer experience platform to look at this MXM Medallia or contact me and I can tell you a little bit more about it. But there's really critical right now that you're in relationship with your membership?
Oh, 100%, Bill. And like, you have to survey people. You have to know where you're at with your members, because that's, you know, that's the reason that you're in business, right? So you have to dig and you have to ask for that data. So Bill, speaking of connecting with you, if somebody's listening to this and they want to find out more about Active Wellness, they want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Yep. ActiveWellness.com is our company. We have a careers page. We have our at-home resources with our virtual offerings, and a lot of stuff there. BMC, as in Bill McBride, BMC3.com is my consulting page. You can reach me through that platform, or just email me at BillMcBride@BMC3.com.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Bill.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. I have a huge favor to ask of you. If you found value in this episode, I'd love it if you would please subscribe, review, and share this episode. It would really mean so much to me. I truly love connecting with fitness and wellness experts, so if you'd like to be on the show or are looking for help in your business, definitely drop me a line and connect with me. You can find me at hello@VanessaSeveriano.com or my social media handles. Since my last name is not the easiest to spell, I'm going to go ahead and make it really easy for you and link my contact details in the show notes. Thanks again for listening. Catch you on the next episode.